Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 321 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Joe, joined by Todd. How are we doing this evening, Todd?
321 is 1, 2, 3 backwards. I'm doing pretty good.
3, 2, 1 contact? Is that a thing?
Oh, I remember 3, 2, 1 contact. I loved that show.
I never watched any of those shows.
Wow.
I think once, like, I was too old for Sesame Street, I stopped watching any of that stuff.
My growth was stunted at an early age, so I was watching that stuff well into my 20s.
It was from all the cigarettes you were smoking.
I smoked a lot of day.
I vividly remember them trying to make us watch Electric Company and 3, 2, 1 Contact when I was in, like, second grade at school.
Oh, and did you rebel?
Not that I rebelled. Like, unless Spider-Man was on, I didn't care.
Oh, boy. Those Spider-Man shorts were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The only two that anybody remembers are the Wall and the Can Crusher. Those are the only two.
Right, exactly. Where's the hipster nostalgia for those?
Oh, any day now.
Remember when there was all the hipster nostalgia for Schoolhouse Rock? I'm Just a Bill and all that sort of stuff.
I remember Schoolhouse Rock. That's how I learned most of my history and stuff and other things.
The way I learned my history, Todd, is from this podcast.
Comic book history?
The only history that matters to me.
That's right. The real stories, not them imaginary stories.
That's right. No rumors and innuendo here. We're straight shooters, pal.
Yeah, I shoot very straight.
Todd's Conrad and I'm Bruce. That's like a reference for like 5 people.
All right.
And let's just get it out of the way. Something, 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 Christian Slater. Something, something, Star Trek VI.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. You blew up my spot. I had so many deep cuts for Christian Slater in this show.
Go ahead. Name one.
I'm not going to do it now. I've been put on the spot. I'm like Asa. I'll be all shy now.
I think Asa might have better performance issues this football picks. If you stay tuned to the end of the episode, he might regale you with his new favorite tune. Spoilers, everyone.
Spoilers.
But let's get into actual news. A lot of it comes out of the February solicitations. As Thanksgiving is approaching, there's no conventions, spoilers for that as well, this weekend. We're going to be mining the solicitations for February for both Marvel and Image and DC for some of our news stuff, whether it be Image putting some books at 25 cents for the month, whether it be Marvel bringing back an old cover scheme, or what is the verbiage? It's a vaporware solicitation.
Oh, my goodness.
And we'll get into that a little bit. Because it is Thanksgiving, which is approaching the beginning of the shopping season, there are tons and tons of digital sales to be discussing. And, of course, a little bit of discussion about, what do they call it that goes on Saturday? Small comic shop, help out a little guy day or something?
Yeah, it's Don't Crush the Little Businessman Day.
Don't Crush the Little Businessman Day this upcoming Saturday, so we'll talk about that as well. We're also going to talk about what we read from this past week, which is Thanos number 1 and Nightwing number 9. We're going to be talking about what we're looking forward to coming out this week. And it is a fifth week, so it's kind of a shorter week. Or no, it's not. This is not. Next week is. I'm looking too far ahead. We're also going to be discussing our best blank, which was a cop this week. And we're also going to be talking TV with The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and The Walking Dead.
Full slate.
Full slate. And I'm making an executive decision later on as well.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to spring it on you.
I love sprunging.
So let's get into these solicitations from the big three, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that Marvel is doing with their February books as a variant cover, they're bringing back the corner box, with art by Joe Jusco. And if you've ever looked at a painted cover before Alex Ross was a thing in the 80s or 90s, it was probably done by Joe Jusco.
What were the Marvel Masterpiece cards? Right. Remember those?
Yes. Ooh. I think I have an issue or two of where they collected the Marvel Masterpiece, either cards or covers, in a comic book.
I think I actually have a set in a box I can see from where I'm sitting of the Marvel Masterpiece 1, and then they did, when they did Marvel Masterpiece 2, I don't know what happened where they I don't think did them all.
No.
Where it was like maybe he did a couple, and then it was just like just all other painted cards, and it wasn't the same.
No, it did, the magic was gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm all for Marvel bringing back any sort of cover variants that they used to have on their covers from back in the 70s and 80s. I just wish it wasn't the variant. Like, remember when they did the anniversary covers where it was like the giant head with all the little pictures around them?
Mm-hmm.
Why not do that as the cover theme, not as the variant, for just some random month?
Because they need to have a variant theme every month, and you can't be wasting them on the regular books. Isn't that like their thing? They have to have a variant scheme every month?
They do.
So, what you're going to have, but then you're going to have to come up with a scheme. You're going to have a side hustle for the variants that you're going to do besides the regular covers that you're doing a variance of.
But they don't do it for every book. They only do it for like 12 books or something.
I thought they did it for more than that usually.
My apologies. They do it for like 20, which is like a little less than half.
I don't know, because I very rarely look at the Marvel variants, because the Marvel variants aren't very rarely are they snuck in where they're like orderable.
Yes.
So to me, the Marvel variants are, you know, 1 in 5, 1 in 10, 1 in 20, or order, you know, order Squirrel Girl as you ordered Civil War 2, number 7. So I just don't care. Where the DC ones, it just seems like, because of the Rebirth books, they have a variant cover. They have two covers every month, so I get to play in that bin. I actually like that. I actually like the Rebirth double covers and looking to see what there are. But I never look for. I actually even forget. There will be times where you're at the shop and you'll hand me your, or we'll be looking at your books, and I'm like, why does Doctor Strange have another cover? And I like that one better, and I'll go look for it. But I never shift through the Marvel piles.
They don't do it as often. And you'd be surprised to hear this, Todd, but the Marvel website doesn't do a good job of showing you or explaining to you which books have multiple covers.
Oh, boy. Well, that's like what Didio saying years ago, that he promised that retailers would get to see what those variant covers were before they would order them. Mm-hmm. Because it would be like, oh, you can get a 1 in 10 so-and-so by so-and-so for this book. And it's like, we don't know what it looks like. It could look like crap, or it could look amazing. And it still hasn't happened.
Eventually. It's on the list of things he's going to get to, Todd. Relax.
Okay.
But I'm all for, I like that Marvel does like a little cutesy thing every month. I want to see the list of rejected themes.
Oh, a Long Box Heroes theme.
Right. I say we do a theme of all failed runs of the 90s.
Oh, yes. What was go ahead.
The one I always lean on, of course, is Mort the Dead Teenager.
Oh, I thought you were going for what was the one that was the Thor knockoff?
Thunderstrike.
Thunderstrike, and then there was the FF one.
That was called Fantastic Force.
Yes, that's what I want, a Fantastic Force and a Thunderstrike. And if you had a double book, that's where it was. If one is good, let's do two.
Right. Well, and that was, it was more like, hey, if one is good, let's do four, is usually the way that it worked.
That is true. That is true.
So anyway, I'm all for, and we'll see. We got to see some of the art. And listen, I'm an old man, so I'm still a sucker for Joe Jusco art.
And I love those old corner things.
Yep, me too.
They were they were fantastic.
So, speaking of the February solicitations, three image books, specifically the Robert Kirkman Skybound books of Outcast, Invincible, and Walking Dead, are going to be 25 cents. Apparently in line with Image's 25th anniversary or something.
Oh. A penny a year.
Right. So Walking Dead is the beginning of a new story. They're all the beginning of a new storyline, so it just sort of lines up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think this is a good idea. Anytime books are cheap, the person who gives comic books away for Halloween wishes it was more kid-friendly books. Yeah. That were super cheap, so I could buy a whole bunch of them and give them away at Halloween. But giving away Invincible, which gets super violent and risque, and Outcast and Walking Dead, well, you know what their deal is. Giving those away for Halloween is a dicey proposition.
Right. And I know what you're saying. You wish it was more like kid-friendly books to give away to kids. But I look at it as it's a nice little thank you to the fans. 25 cents. It's nice. You know, hey, if you get that book every month, then boom, you know, you get a 25, you get a break that month. And I don't know if you know this. I hope Kirkman could afford it. Cause I'm worried that like 1 month he might just have to eat ramen noodles and hot dogs.
Right.
Because these books are a quarter, but like it, I don't know. I kind of like it because if anybody could go for the cash grab, it could be Kirkman, and he does, like, you know, with other stuff outside of comics, like, oh, there's Walking Dead Monopoly and Walking Dead whatever, and here's some props and stuff. But with the comics, we could have 19 Walking Dead comics a month.
That is
true.
And we don't.
So I think it's a nice thank you. Like, here, I do one book a month. All right, every once in a while I'll do something weird where, you know, he even did that one where that digital comic where Vaughn did the story.
Yep.
But I don't know. But I kind of like it. I kind of like that, you know, it's a quarter and it's a nice thank you. And, like, all joking aside, Kirkman could take that beating and, you know, it's good to go.
Right, because this is not a new practice, of course, and this is one of those things that I remember when DC or Marvel would launch a new story in, like, the mid-2000s. There was, like, the Batman 10-cent issue and a Superman 12-cent issue, and then there was the Fantastic Four 9-cent issue.
Right, they were trying to lowball everybody.
Right, right.
Like, who had the cheapest comic out? You
know? And those are all good stories, and those are books that I wish I had more of. Because mm-hmm. those are books that are, you know, cheap and easy to give away, or at least at the time. I know the Fantastic Four one, because it wasn't as high as a print run as a Batman or Superman, are a little bit more tough to come by, and actually go for a little bit more than 9 cents.
What? They doubled in price?
At least doubled.
I bought two of those, I could sell them later down the line.
I like the fact that they're doing this, especially the fact that it's like, hey, not only is Walking Dead, but these other two Kirkman books are, in the hopes that maybe they get the bump of the Walking Dead in addition to, like, they're on the previews pages, and they're going to be talked about in the same breath as the Walking Dead. Like, if they weren't already, because they're written by Robert Kirkman, now they have to be, because it's all three books, all three written by Robert Kirkman, all new story arcs, all 25 cents.
And I don't think, I hope they do, I just don't think they'll get that much of a bump. Because if they haven't gotten the bump with Walking Dead being what it is, I think like one issue will get the bump, and then it'll be like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? But what does that do for a book that he sold for a quarter?
Right.
I don't see it, like, because I could see somebody in the shop being like, oh, I'm buying all these books, and then it's like, oh, 75 cents for three books? I'm already getting Walking Dead, so it's really 50 cents for two other books. Grab them, but the next month, are they going to pay the $2.99? I know Outcast is $2.99. I don't know what Invincible is. Are
they going to pay that? Well.
Are they going to pay that from here on out and keep going?
It's worth a shot.
I agree. I'm just being you know, I'm just telling what my opinion is on it.
So I hope it pays off for all three books. And, you know, you mentioned, of course, the fact that there's still only one Walking Dead. I doff my hat to Robert Kirkman. The fact that there's not a Fear the Walking Dead comic book and or multiple other Walking Dead comics written by a multitude of other people.
It would be so cool if it was like NCIS or at any of those shows. It's like Walking Dead Miami and Walking Dead Portland. Wouldn't that be fantastic? Walking Dead Scranton.
They do. Oh, the first issue is Walking Dead blank, and it's like fill in the town of your comic shop.
Ooh. Gimmicks.
That's right. More gimmicks. So the one of the things from the DC solicitations that Todd had pointed out to me is one of the books that are coming out, and it's almost as though these books are being solicited to come out in time with a Wonder Woman movie. Because one of the books is entitled Wonder Woman and the Justice League of America. And this is post-Doomsday Justice League. And this is, I guess, when Guy Gardner... Is this... Yeah, Guy Gardner has not become Warrior yet.
He might... He was either the Yellow Lantern, because he was only a Yellow Lantern for the... Well, yellow. He had the yellow ring for like a year and a half. So it's either then... Or when he was Warrior, or a little bit of both.
This looks like the beginning. The issue of Guy Gardner that they have in there is the beginning of him becoming Warrior. So he's not Warrior yet.
Could you tell me what issue number do they have written there?
15.
I think he's still... the yellow ring, but yes. It's close. Yeah, you said it's coming.
So this is when the Justice League was Captain Atom, Bloodwind, Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, Maxima, and Wonder Woman, of course. So Todd thought that this was an odd choice to be solicited, and obviously the cut and dry version of this is, it's a Wonder Woman book, it's Wonder Woman something, never before collected. Wonder Woman's going to be the Justice League movie, the title says Wonder Woman of the Justice League. People are going to think Batman and Superman and Aquaman are going to be in this, and they're in for a rude awakening.
Oh, yes, they are. And the thing that kind of chaps me a little bit is that this got published, and years ago I bought those Justice League International hardcovers and trades, and, you know, there was four or five of them, and it went up to where Justice League International and Justice League Europe crossed over for the Teasdale Imperative, which I always thought was a great name. And then that's really where it stops. And there's still Justice League International issues left to be traded by Keith Giffen, Jam DeMatteis, and Adam Hughes did the art on them. And those aren't out yet. There are Adam Hughes issues of a classic run, at least in my opinion, a classic run, that are out. And they're putting this out. And like you said, it's not a very good run. I remember reading the book afterwards and like, wow, it was bad. And it only got worse. I think it went to 125 issues or something like that.
Yes.
And it was hot garbage after Dan Juergens left.
So Todd, I was unaware of this book until you brought it up. Usually I breeze through the DC trades portion until I get the actual physical previews in my hands. Mm-hmm. And you'd mentioned that there's parts of the Justice League International run that haven't been collected. And Todd, it's not as though I have a list of things that DC solicited and never released. Most notably, to add to the list, not something I was reading, but they did just recently cancel the final trade of Justice League United.
Yep, I saw that, and every time I see that one goes down like that, I'm like, is Joe going to complain this week about canceled trades?
Well, Todd, I'm going on record today.
Mm-hmm.
This trade is never seeing the light of day.
What? It could.
Okay.
If they ever do a movie with a lot of the people from Justice League United, it will see the light of day like the Wonder Woman Justice League crappy Justice League issues.
No, no. I'm not saying that Justice League United trade. I'm saying this Wonder Woman of the Justice League thing that we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
this trade is never getting released.
Really?
This trade will be silently canceled before it comes out.
Nope.
You think this will see the light of day?
This is our next bet right here.
Okay.
I think that this will see the light of day just because there is not a lot of Wonder Woman product other than the, like, ongoings, like the classic ongoing, which I don't know how they're going to put those out, like the Silver Age stuff and stuff like that. But of modern, there's only really the George Perez, and they're slowly putting that out. And the Azzarello stuff is out, and maybe there's some left of the New 52. But you have to fill up the shelves. They fill up the shelves with stuff. And I'm telling you, this is going to come out.
Okay. I don't know what the wager is going to be on this.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see this making the light of day.
I do.
All right.
Justice League, Wonder Woman on the cover. Oh, it's going to be huge. It's going to be bigly.
All right. We will see. So that's really all we got for news. We'll figure out what the bet's going to be on this Wonder Woman Justice League thing that'll never see the light of day.
I love gambling with you on this show.
All right. I love it too. It's only when I win, though.
Aha.
So, as I mentioned briefly at the top of the show, there are no conventions this weekend. And by no conventions, I mean, like, there's two conventions, but they're smaller, sort of, you know, one-dayers that have no guests, that are, like, one's in Toronto, I think, and the other one is in St. Charles, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
Well, nobody wants to be on the road during Thanksgiving.
Right. I will be on the road during Thanksgiving heading out to Ohio for AIW Wrestling.
Root Beer Wrestling's going to make you drive during Thanksgiving?
They actually, Black Friday is one of their traditional shows, and they usually do a better than average draw at the door because everybody's home for the holidays.
Oh. Sounds like fun.
Yep, yep. So I'm excited for that. And soon-to-be-named-network.com. We have a bunch of shows, whether it be Podvocacy, Puzzle Warriors 3, which is early this week because of the holiday, Prodigal Sons Podcast, Talking Gimmicks is back, and of course us here on Longbox Heroes and Longbox Heroes After Dark. I'm not sure if there'll be a profane argument this week. I think Puzzle Warriors 3 might be taking its recording time. But either way, whenever one of these shows go live, check soon-to-be-named-network.com, and you'll know. They're mm-hmm. all good shows. Check them out. So while you're over at the website checking out the other shows, be sure to check out the digital sales and freebies. Image pretty much has everything released within the last 3 years on sale. IDW has pretty much everything released in the last couple years on sale. Marvel has a bunch of their newer collections, stuff spinning out of Secret War and even stuff spinning out of what's current. Everything from Amazing Spider-Man to Sam Wilson, Captain America, all sorts of things. And they also have a bunch of Venom and Carnage-related stuff. Sadly, Venom the Mace is not included in that sale.
Don't know that one.
Venom the Mace with art by friend of the show, Tom Derenick.
Oh, that's right. I was in that one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, wait. I might have just been on the cover of one of those.
Well, either way, not on sale.
That should be.
Right, right. Spider Island is on sale, which is a very good little run during the Dan Slott time on Amazing Spider-Man, which is still ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And Aftershock, one of the newer indie companies, is having all of their stuff on sale. I recommend Super Zero by friend of the show and past guest of the show, Jimmy Palmiotti.
Yes.
Very fun little miniseries there. I was sad to learn that it was just a miniseries, but that's how those things go for me.
I thought he was going to leave Harley Quinn to go do that full time.
No.
No, yeah.
I think Harley Quinn makes millions and millions of dollars.
And millions, but anyway.
So there's a bunch of new freebies as well. She-Hulk number one, which I think is the first issue penned by Dan Slott. There's that name again. The Star Wars number one, not the new one by Jason Aaron, but the first one by Brian Wood that was at Dark Horse originally, now is owned by Marvel and or Disney. That's for free. The first issue of the Abnett and Lanning Nova series, which is a really good underrated series in the midst of them recreating and making the cosmic side of Marvel readable.
Yes, bringing us the Guardians of the Galaxy movie out of all that.
Speaking of which, the first issue of Annihilation : Conquest, Star-Lord number one, is there.
Ooh.
And that little miniseries was the first book that made me sit up and take notice that Star-Lord was a thing.
I had heard of him, but yes, that's where I got my introduction to Star-Lord.
Yep. Written by Keith Giffen. That's some good stuff. And that really is the book that kind of started the ball rolling to where we are today with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Even though I would throw it all the way back to Keith Giffen's Drax mini that started it all.
Right. Was Drax part of, like, because they did, like, remember they did, like, four miniseries?
Nope, it wasn't. There was the four original minis, and then the Annihilation one shot, and then the mini, whatever. But before all this, there was a Drax four issue mini that just stood on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if that was like the tryout for Keith, if you know what I mean. It was like doing a cosmic character, and then he went on to do all that. And somewhere in there, he took over for Jim Starlin on the Thanos issues when Jim left in a huff. The ongoing. I don't know if you remember that.
Right, you are correct. It was the Drax miniseries that led into a Nova miniseries.
Okay.
That led into Annihilation. And then that led into all of the Conquest, the four Conquest miniseries.
Gotcha.
Because I kind of know my cosmic collects stuff. Them here.
What?
I have the trade that collects them here.
Oh, cool.
I had to let the slack out of my headphone cord so I can go over to the bookcase and grab it.
Well, I always said you were a slacker.
That is true. So those are some good free digital comics to go check out. All that will be in the show notes, in addition to everything else that we discussed, so on and so forth. And let's get into what we've read from this past week, sir. I'll let you start off, since I'm sure you were more excited about the Thanos book than I was.
That's right, after all that.
My book, I was most looking forward to coming out this week.
Yep, after all that hot cosmic talk that we had there, mm-hmm. We're going to go into Thanos number one by Jeff Lemire and artist Mike Diodato, a book I was looking forward to. Basically, this is basically telling the story that Thanos had created an empire recently and then disappeared and left it in charge of his second-in-command, Corvus Glaive. And this is basically Thanos coming back to take his rightful place in that empire. And while all that's going on, Champion, another big cosmic character, is looking for Star Fox because he wants him to go with him to do a mission to take care of stuff that's going on with that Thanos is starting to do stuff. And somehow his son Thane is involved, who I was never a fan of Thane as a character, but I want to see where this goes as, you know, Thanos comes back to fight Corvus Glaive for his rightful throne. And spoiler alert, you know, not too many people can take Thanos in a one-on-one, so I think you kind of know where that's going. But in the end, we find out the reason Thane is making a move is he gets some information from possibly Death, about Thanos' future, and that was the big reveal at the end, which kind of made me go, I'm kind of interested in that.
Good cliffhanger, I thought. Good moving of the pieces together. Now, I'm not as familiar with this part of the cosmic side of things. You mm-hmm. said Champion. I guess that's not a new character?
No, he was one of, I think he's one of the elders of the universe.
Okay.
He's one of those, he's, because I get, I do know my cosmic stuff pretty good, but like the characters, because, you know, Marvel has their Inhumans, their, you know, elders, their, I'm trying to remember like all the cosmic characters that they, the Celestials, this and that. But he was one of them, and he was one of them that he took during Thanos' quest. He took the gem, the power gem off of him.
Gotcha.
And he has a great issue, if you can ever find it, of he comes to Earth and starts lining up heroes. He's like, I want your toughest and your baddest, and we're going to fight. And it ends up...
Oh, is he Contest of Champions champion?
No, I think he might have been in that, but I think Contest of Champions was the Games Master.
Okay.
Who was also... Who was also, I think, an Elder of the Universe who had an Infinity Gem. But this was him doing all that, and it ended up being Thing was fighting him, and Thing ended up getting his butt handed to him. But Champion left the Earth alone because Thing would not give up, even though he was almost dead. Great issue if you can find it. But Champion has just been a big, tough baddie for a long time, and he's kind of different in here. He's a little different, so I want to see where that goes. And Star Fox... I know a little bit about from like Infinity Gauntlet and stuff like that, but other than him being persuasive, if you know what I mean, I don't know much about him other than being, I think, Thanos' half-brother or something like that.
Right, and see, for me, I thought Champion was a guy that they had just made up to kind of be like, oh, we're going to take the piss out of Lobo a little bit, you know?
No. He's been around a long time.
Okay.
At least the 80s that I know, like early 80s that I know of.
Now, I thought this was a very good book. I thought Jeff Lemire, you know, obviously outside of my naivete regarding Champion, he does a very good job with Thane, the little bit that we know of him, his relationship that he has. Mm-hmm. Obviously, how he has the information about Thanos that he has, I think, is coming from this person.
Mm-hmm.
He does a very good job with Thanos, of course. And he does a very good job with Star Fox, establishing that Star Fox is kind of like a galactic ladies' man.
He always was, yes.
Right. And then how Champion is just like, come on, cut the malarkey. Like, let's get down to business sort of thing. It's like, mm-hmm. we're showing you what he is, but now we're not going to deal with that as much. We're going to kind of get into the seriousness of the story. And he does a very, like, I thought this was a really good book.
Yes, I think they're going to, like, give us everything we knew about Star Fox was a lie, but in a good way, because
well,
I kind of...
not so much as a lie, but it's more so of like, hey, we know that's you, but we're not going to be doing that, these issues.
Right.
Like, you need to leave that part of your persona over here and come along with us.
Mm-hmm. And as for Champion, his first appearance was in the Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 7 in 1982. And it was the story that I'm thinking of where he comes to Earth and is like, I'm going to destroy it unless you send people to fight me. So, yeah, he's been around that long.
Gotcha. But, yeah, this was a really good book. Like I said, mostly I thought Jeff Lemire did a really good job of writing Thanos.
Mm-hmm. And that Mike Diodato knows how to draw some pretty pictures.
Yes, he does. Some nice detail, some nice splashy stuff. Just a really good book all around. Can't recommend this one enough.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the other book that we read, and you did get a chance to read this, correct?
Yes, I read Nightwing also.
Okay, so this was Nightwing number 9, and written by Tim Seeley, with art by Javier Fernandez. Now, the solicitation text for this is a little incorrect, because this is more or less a one-shot issue, where Dick is being haunted by dreams from Dr. Destiny, and he looks to Superman for assistance. Now, one of the things that they've always done since Dick has become Nightwing is that Dick has a different relationship with Superman than Batman does.
Right.
It's more of a... It's more of a friend-mentor relationship than a teacher-mentor relationship, if that makes any sense, like it is with Batman.
Right. It's more fun, more like a fun relationship than an intense one like he has with Bruce and as Batman.
Right. Now, I'm not reading any of the current Superman stuff in Rebirth, but apparently Superman is not the Superman that Dick or we have known. He is the Superman who was in the Dan Jurgens, Lois and Clark miniseries that happened pre-Rebirth. Am I correct?
Yes. The best way to describe what Superman is running around in this DC Rebirth universe, it's the John Byrne Superman.
Okay.
It's all that has happened. He died with Doomsday. All that happened. And then that Dan Jurgens Lois thing is they've had a kid together, and it's further on down the road than any stories we know. But that's the pre-New 52 Superman we all know and love is this one.
So this Superman not only doesn't have this, well, he has the relationship with Dick Grayson, but not Dick Grayson has the relationship with this Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But he needs Superman's assistance, so he begrudgingly goes to him. Of course, Superman assists him, and this Superman has knowledge of all the other Earths.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells Rebirth Dick Grayson of, I guess, post-Zero Hour Dick Grayson? And, like, mm-hmm. how he went to Bloodhaven and kind of, like, made a life for himself.
Right.
So this issue is a one-shot issue where they defeat Dr. Destiny, but this sets Dick Grayson on that path to that Chuck Dixon run of Nightwing from the late 90s, early 2000s.
Scott McDaniel art, really good stuff.
Right. So that's why this issue jumped out so much for me.
It jumped out more for me of the, and I like Nightwing, and it's funny because there's a moment in it where now, you know, Dick doesn't know this Superman, and Superman kind of knows of this Dick Grayson, but there is a moment where he tells Dick Grayson, he's like, you know what, of all the people I've met in this new rebirth world, whatever you want to call it, he's like, you're one of them that's changed the least, and I find that amusing because he has changed the least, if you know what I mean. It was like, because the whole Batman storylines were doing so well, they didn't have to mess with too much in the New 52, other than when he was the spy, which they touch on in this. But I don't know, I liked it, but it just reminds me of how confusing what they did with Superman can be.
Yeah, that's like, true.
That was one of my big problems coming into Rebirth was, and I stand by it, is Flash is another one where they want all the reverse Flashes to be a thing, but I don't know what everything else is. And Superman being the John Byrne Superman and the New 52 Superman being dead and what he knows, I always, whenever I read it, I go, wow, this just makes everything more. I'm enjoying Rebirth. Don't confuse me. Just tell me a good story.
And so many people tell me that the new Superman books are good.
Right. The Trinity book is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another one where it's, hey, Superman or Batman and Wonder Woman show up to Superman because Lois invites them to get them to know the new Superman. Like, hey, you need to trust him. And they go off on this adventure that's now involved with the Black Mercy and everything. It's really good. I'm loving it. But they don't get deeply involved in the minutia of, hey, it's Superman, we don't know each other, it's very confusing. I just like it because it's more straightforward and they're starting to trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but. Right, so it was, I enjoyed it was good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to this week. Every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, sometimes a little bit later, over at longboxheroes.com, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all of the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you think that Wonder Woman Justice League trade is coming out in March, bully on you, it won't be. However you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out, be prepared. Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd has a one correct guess lead on me, and there is only, what, 6 weeks left in the year?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. So, I go first. Looking at your list, obviously the window decals don't count.
I was looking forward to them most, though, but go ahead.
Just saying about the window decals, Todd is getting Blue Beetle and Booster Gold window decals. I find it so funny that that specific image of Booster and Gold, Booster and Beetle is what they have chosen as the mass market imagery for them. Mm-hmm. Like, that appears on wallets, that appears on stickers, that appears on decals, that appears on shirts. It's that specific image, and I just find it like that's the one that, like, somebody approved and said, yep, let's run with that one.
And the funny thing is, in the solicit for it, and I knew because there was a picture, so it wasn't like I got it for that and then was disappointed, is they're like, hey, Booster Gold and Blue Beetle window decals with art by Kevin Maguire. And it's not. That's
the animal Chris Bautista.
That's right, the animal Chris Bautista. So once again, sometime, I guess they couldn't get them the art or something. I don't know.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
I've only had 3 or 4 years lead time to get those window decals done. But anyway, looking at your list, gut reaction, I'm going to say the book you're most looking forward to coming out this week is Mighty Thor 13.
No, it is not.
Oh, my goodness.
It is the gosh darned number 5.
Second choice, the other Jason Aaron book coming out this week.
Mm-hmm. Looking at, because that's been a while since we've seen the gosh darned.
That has been.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to guess gut reaction because it's been haunting me on the spreadsheet. The last issue came out in March. Now let me verify. Go ahead while you guess.
Could I ask a question?
Go ahead.
What is Ad After Death Book 1?
Give me 1 second on that one.
Okay.
Now, it claims the last issue of Goddamn came out in June, which I feel is a lie.
That, I don't know. That's 5 months ago. That could be right.
Anyway, AD After Death is a book by Jeff Lemire and Scott Snyder that started out as supposed to be a prose book. But ended up being broken up into a 3-issue kind of prestige format, kind of combination prose, comic book, etc., etc.
Is that what you're looking forward to most?
It is not.
Oh, I thought I would have got you. Gained some ground.
You thought I would go highbrow this week, Todd? I'll give you a hint. I'm going the lowest of lowbrows this week.
Lowest of lowbrows?
Yes.
Is it Civil War 2, number 7?
Civil War 2, number 7.
That was my second guess.
I've been loving Civil War 2, begrudgingly stretched out as late as it is. I feel as though they're doing a severe disservice to the characterization of Carol Danvers. But we've got at least one more issue in the next 7 to 8 weeks to kind of wrap it all up.
So you don't think it's going to be out before the new year?
It's a bet.
I'm calling my shot because I don't know. I'm looking at the calendar right now. I'm looking at the calendar. And I have a feeling, and I'm calling it, it's going to come out the 28th, that week between Christmas and New Year's Eve, where DC and Marvel put out like one book.
Right.
And that's where they're going to try and scoop up all that heat for that one day with the last one. They're going to try to get it out for the last Wednesday in the month.
That is the current solicit date.
And I think with that's, what, how many Wednesdays away?
6.
that it can be done.
It could be done, Todd.
Mm-hmm. But it won't be.
But I did just send Brian Bendis an email of an even better ending.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Are you going to get credit?
No.
No?
Boy. So, neither one of us were right, so that's a good thing. Let's get into our question. Mm-hmm. And that was Best Cop. And we had some interesting choices. Mark Cole, hopefully all your stuff is taken care of by the time you're listening to this. He said, if he counts, Barry Allen from the Silver Age. If not, Ben Turpin from Superman the Animated Series. Longtime listener of the show over on Twitter, Daniel Silverthorne, mentioned Axe Cop. And that's a good one. Todd, who is your pick?
Mine is probably the tried and true, and I, you know, it's probably if we pulled America, it would have to be good old Jim Gordon. Jim Gordon is, you know, he's the one when I think comic cop, I think, you know, commissioner. You know, we've seen him from Batman Year One as an up and coming cop to all versions. It's Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, good old Stiff Peg Pete over the website mentioned that. Michael Lee Carter, Wednesday Comics over on Twitter, said that as well. And he even posted a pic of Jim Gordon from Batman Year One, which is my exact pick. Jim Gordon from that run. Why would not the lead character of one of my favorite, if not my favorite comic book story of all time, be my favorite cop?
If Wally West as an IRS agent counts, I want to change it to that. Do you remember when he did his IRS run?
When he won the lottery?
When he won the lottery, and while he was off inside of Chunk's alternate universes, singularities, his mother didn't pay the taxes, so they came and took it all, and to help what he owed, he became an IRS agent, and he even had a badge. And I remember when he had to go after a demon to get money, and the demon's like, in the end, even I don't want to mess with the IRS. Great stuff. So if it's not Jim Gordon, if it could be Wally West, IRS agent, but he's more of an agent than a cop, so I guess I'm going to stick with Jim Gordon.
Jim Gordon is the correct answer.
It is.
So again, thanks to everyone for participating in the question of the week. We are going to be taking a week off.
What?
For the weekly question.
Executive decision?
Executive decision, only because the post would have to go up on Thursday, and I don't know. You know, I could schedule the post ahead of time, but it's Thanksgiving. We're taking the week off.
Oh my goodness.
We don't take a week off for the show. We'll take a week off for the question.
Oh, my goodness. That's crazy, son.
It is crazy. I'm a crazy man.
You are a crazy man. You know what? I like having a week not having to think about the question.
Nothing makes Todd more happy than not having to think.
You know it, brother.
So again, who contributed, thanks to everyone for listening. We are going to take a few second break here because we're going to get into TV talk with discussions of The Flash, The Legends of Tamari, and The Walking Dead. And just in case you do not want to cover those things, or didn't watch them, don't want them spoiled, or don't care, then we bid you adieu, and we'll be back in like 2 seconds to talk about The Flash to begin with. All right. Flash. So, Wally is having more and more, he's having visions about him being Kid Flash. From the time that he was in Flashpoint, Alchemy's talking to him. They have to deal with the Shade, who shows up. And also Cisco blabs off to everyone that Caitlin has Killer Frost powers because he vibes her and sees them fighting.
Yes.
But more importantly, Todd,
Mm-hmm.
They dealt with a question that you specifically have been asking on this show every week for the last 6 episodes that The Flash has been back.
Yes, and I love the fact that this Wells is like, and everybody's just telling me this now. And I'm like, that is pretty good. And they're like, oh, well, fair to be fair, you're not a genius when you said you were. He's like, ah, oh, touche. But he has that thing.
And
now
you got me. My white lie to you not telling me I'm a murderer.
On this planet. That if I get caught outside, I can get the chair. Okay. Seems like those scales are balanced perfectly.
But all right. But, all right. I'm hip. I'm fun. Wells, I'll slide. I'll play.
Yep. But it's about the fact that his, you know, face is, you know, that the Eobard Wells confessed to killing Barry's mother. So you have that, but I like the fact that he has the holographic imager, and it's his partner from Earth, whatever he's on. But the only thing I can think of is, when is that gonna not work at the worst possible time, if you know what I mean?
Well, no, Todd, they did it correctly where he does the gimmick,
mm-hmm.
then he gives them the Men in Black mind wipe, so they all see him normally as Wells, but mm-hmm. everyone else sees him as the other guy, and then they never have to bring it up again.
Until...
Easy peasy.
Right, until he's out with Joe's new girlfriend who's a cop, and they all see him as Wells, and it breaks, and nobody notices that he's looking like Wells again, and he's going to be like, hey, everybody, and she's going to be like, freeze, you're under arrest for the murder of Barry's mother. That's going to happen. I'm calling the shot now.
I think they did this as a one-time fix to never have to bring it up again.
Nope. It's going to happen. But anyway, while all that's going on, he also starts interfering with Joe's date, which I thought was funny.
Oh, that was some nice comic relief on this episode. Absolutely.
Yes. He was blocking him on the date, which I thought was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to see where that goes, because I think Joe's going to give him a stern talking to.
Yeah, he's... I'm very excited to see Joe deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Then on top of that, you have the Shade, which is interesting, because to me, it was like a one and done for me with the Shade. Because he's not the Shade I know from Starman.
Right.
So I'm kind of like, do what you want. He's not the coolest Shade ever made. Let's do this. So I'm not a big fan of what they did with him, but then we always see, especially with this Wells, he has all the answers, which is kind of weird to me. He's like, oh, we're going to call him the Shade because we have a Shade in our planet. And I'm like hoping that Shade is just like the Shade that's in my mind. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy about that. And the fact that he mentions that they have tons of sentient gorillas is really cool. I'm hoping like multiple Earth gorillas show up for Grodd. But I'm trying to think of what else was going on in the show.
Okay, so they lock Wally up so Alchemy can't get to him.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, as soon as Shade shows up and everyone, it's all hands on deck to deal with Shade. Alchemy immediately gets through whatever defenses they have set up. Wally's in a bunch of pain. Iris knocks him out one punch, Guy Gardner, Batman style.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wally's like, hey, listen, I'll be the decoy. It's fine. I'll go to Alchemy. You guys follow me. And we'll just take down Alchemy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they do that. They get the Philosopher's Stone out of his hands. They get all of his followers and so forth, which, as a side note, I think I postulated that Draco Malfoy might have been Alchemy, but I think Draco Malfoy might be one of the followers.
Okay.
I don't think he's Alchemy proper.
I don't want to say anything because I kind of know what Alchemy's gimmick was from the comic, like I've said before.
Right.
So I have an idea. I might honestly write it down and put it in a sealed envelope for you later at the shop today.
Gotcha.
So when they reveal the whole Alchemy thing, I can have like proof whether or not I was right, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So that's kind of my thing. Like, I don't want to say anything because if I'm right, it's a big spoiler. Do you know what I mean?
But then Wally goes and picks up the Philosopher's Stone, and hey, it's a TV show that happens in 2016 on, you know, I guess network TV, and we're just going to have Savitar show up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. All bets are off, I guess, huh?
That's right, because not only, you know, for season one, it was Eobard as Reverse Flash. Season two, it was Zoom. And now it's like, oh, well, we have Alchemy, but we also had Rival, and now we even have Savitar running around. And I'm like, oh, God, I would like to really get away from the speedster villains, but I don't think we're going to get. And I'm hoping, I want to see what they do with Savitar, because the Savitar storyline in Flash was one of my all-time favorite. Like, the way, I don't know what they're going to do here, but the way they got rid of him in the comic is fantastic, and I didn't see it coming. So I want to see what they do over here, because it could be really cool if it plays out the way it did in the comic.
And Savitar was a Mark Waid villain?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you ever read that, Rob?
I did.
Okay.
Because, obviously, in Mark Waid's run, you've got the stuff with Wally and what's his wife's name? Linda.
Mm-hmm.
You've got that stuff. And then in the TV show, you've got Barry and Iris. And it feels to me that the Barry-Iris relationship in the TV show is very much the Wally-Linda relationship from the Mark Waid run.
Oh, yeah, they just totally, because there was never anything to the Barry-Iris run in the Silver Age. It was pretty much cookie-cutter relationship. You know, right. Like, that's how the story, because, and that's what I always said, that Barry didn't get a personality, because he died off in the 80s when comics were changing. And it was like, oh, well, Hal became this. And, you know, like, he became like a jet jockey who was traumatized by his father's death in a crash. It was like we gave them more. Where Barry was just the classic story of a superhero powers. We're going to give him a little bit. And towards the end, they gave him a little bit of a story. But then once they killed him, Wally got all that, you know, thought. So they're mining all of Wally's stuff for the TV show.
Right, so that's why when, like, Savitar shows up, a lot of the dialogue in this and the previous episodes with Barry and Iris, I'm like, all right, I'm on board, because this is, that's when I started picking up on the Flash during that Mark Waid run.
Mm-hmm.
But I like this episode. You know, obviously I would have liked the Shade to be more Starman Shade, but you can't have everything that you want to be in these TV shows.
That's right. And I always said that with these shows, time travel will fix it all, and we'll get the Shade from Starman.
I'm sure that was the Shade. Well, no, the Shade on that Wells Earth wasn't that way.
Right. Well, it could either be an alternate Earth Shade we'll get, or time travel fixes everything. Because remember, we didn't have a Killer Frost, and now we do.
Right.
And things change, so anything could happen. We'll see.
So moving along to a character that you probably hold a little bit more near and dear to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on Legends of Tomorrow, where they return to the Old West times and Jonah Hex returns. But they have to deal with Quentin Turnbull, who, due to him finding, what was it, dwarf star material?
Yes, in the mines.
In a mine, he uses that to take over 3/4 of the United States.
Or he was going to.
Well, right. That's what they have to prevent from happening.
Right. It was the future was changing to him starting his own country in 1/4 of the United States.
Right.
Which he never did in the comic, by the way.
Right. And that was going to be my question to you, being the Jonah Hex aficionado. Obviously, this did not happen. This is not real.
No, this is there of the Jonah Hex. I like Jonah Hex in this episode more than I did the first one,
mm-hmm.
because he's more ornery, if you know what I mean.
I do.
And I think it showed, like, I like the scene where he's on the horse and he's going to get, they're going to hang him. And the guy's like, oh, you know, we're finally going to get you, Jonah. We're going to hang you. And Jonah's like, you know, oh, like, come here. And he comes over and he just kicks him right in the face. And that is so Jonah Hex. That gave me goosebumps because it's like, I'm dying. I might as well just knock your teeth out. And I'm like, that's fantastic. And then there's another scene later when they're outside the saloon and they're like, Mick's in there and he's doing his thing. And he's like, I don't have time. And he just loads up his gun. And I'm going to go in and I'm going to cause trouble. And I'm like, that's Jonah again, just being ornery. That's what I like. But then Turnbull is not the character that he is in the comics. In the comics, he's mad at Jonah because Jonah surrendered as a Confederate soldier and through a series of events got framed for capturing Turnbull's son, who was Jonah's best friend, and causing his death by a turn of events. And that's the only reason he hates him. And in this, we find out that it was because of the town that Rip was protecting with Jonah years ago. And we found out all that origin, that he locked Jonah in the church, and that's where he got the scar for his face. All that backstory is nothing like Jonah's origin. So I immediately checked out on that.
Oh,
I was like, so sad. I was like, his origin is so much better than that. And I was kind of like, cheap way out. But I really didn't like all that. But I like the portrayal of Jonah more than I did the last episode, if that makes any sense. So I got some, but I had some taken away at the same time.
I will say this, and again, we'll get into like all the dips and dops of the main characters in this, but I still can't get over this Jonah, even with his funky mouth, still being too attractive. He's too attractive.
I guess. I don't know, because certain ways he was drawn in the comic, other than the scar, he looks very... people say he's attractive, like that side. And then the scar is what kind of repels people, though it kind of makes the ladies like him more, I think. I don't know. Like, he is a ladies' man in the comics.
Right.
Like, I don't know, just if they have, like, the bad boy thing or whatever. But he has a few ladies in the book.
So, in this, you get a bunch of people paired off. You get Vixen and Heatwave paired off. You get Nate and Ray paired off, and then White Canary is paired off with Jonah, while Jax and Dr. Stein are doing their thing, right?
Well, Dr. Stein is having his memories changed.
Right, because of the things that he did in the last episode, I think, are messing with his memories.
His timeline, yeah.
Right. Is this what they call, in your vernacular, wibbly-wobbly-timey-wimey?
Kind of, yes.
Okay, so they're dealing with that. Obviously, you got big repercussions there. I felt as though everybody else's kind of interactions were very samey and cookie-cuttery.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Jonah's like, taking orders from a lady? No, sir! And then White Canary's like, you and I aren't so different, Jonah Hex, even though I'm a lady and you're not. And then Vixen and Heatwave's like, I'm angry and I hate everyone. I have an animal inside of me. And then every time Vixen is like, I know something about having an animal inside me as well, and then does like the tap on her necklace. And I'm just like, give me a break, guys. Come on.
And that was kind of tough, yeah.
What was that?
That was kind of tough, but go on.
And then all the stuff with... Nate and Ray was kind of a little like, hey, I wanted to say that. Hey, you're the new me. What's going on here? Blah, 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 blah. Then it all kind of ended around when we got to see that Ray's like, ah, I'm sorry I was stepping on your feet this episode. Look, I made you this fancy costume.
My favorite, some of my favorite parts were the Ray-Nate stuff, though.
Right, because that was, I like their interplay.
because it was, I like the fact that it was Ray, like, I've been here before and I've done this, and he's kind of mentoring Nate on the, like, yeah, you don't want to do this. And it's funny because it's true, but Ray is still enamored with the Old West too. So they're doing all that. And I don't care what anybody says, Nate stopping the train made me, I had so much fun with that because there's just the goofiness of them. Like, you have all the other characters and all the gloom and doom that, that appeared in comics and movies over the years. But he's like, hey, did you see me stop the train? That was awesome. And I'm like, it kind of was. It kind of was, Nate.
Right. I do really like Nate as the new character on the show, kind of like... Mm-hmm. You know, obviously we're like 5 or 6 episodes in and he already has powers and he already has a suit, but he's still new, so he still has a lot of that wide-eyed wonder, which mm-hmm. I do like quite a bit.
And do you think anything's going to happen with that dwarf star matter to maybe give Ray shrinking powers?
Oh boy.
Or do you think he's just going to build an army of shrinking suits with all that?
I just hope whatever he does, he doesn't grow again.
Oh, I love what, that's the best effect ever. Like, it goes growing effect, full on steel, and I'm trying to think, train. Those are the three effects that are the best.
I didn't think the train effect was terrible mm-hmm. in combination with the not full on steel. I think mm-hmm. they've kind of got a handle on it. It's like, yeah, we can't really expose the steel transformation too much.
Mm-hmm.
Let's like have explosions happening near him while it happens, or have it happen in quick cuts.
That's why I think they gave him the suit, which there is almost next to nothing covered,
right.
Not covered. So now what, all you have to do is, like, I honestly think you're going to see that change now to, it might be silver paint, because all they have to do is chin and around the eyes, if you know what I mean. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, because with his face, we have to do his hair, we have to do everything. But with that helmet on, it's kind of like, oh, just do Tin Man on his chin and we're good to go.
I hope he's not allergic to the paint.
Oh my God, that would be terrible. And he'd have to be like, he'd be like become a scarecrow or something like that.
Well, I just hope that if they do around the eyes when he's wearing the costume, when he takes the mask off, it goes away.
What? I know what you're talking about, all that black makeup on, like, Batman's mask and stuff
right,
like that.
Right, exactly.
And there is a scene, I think it's in Batman Returns,
oh,
with
yes.
Keaton.
That's the scene that I always think of with that.
He rips it off, and the mask rips and breaks, which is fantastic.
Right.
And he pulls it up, and I'm like, where did all the eye black go? Where did it go? But anyway...
As much as we're kind of, like, putzing around and having fun with this episode, I really like this episode. I've, you know, outside of a couple episodes last season where it was like, oh, we got an extra order, let's pad out some of the stuff, I've always been enjoying Legend of Tomorrow.
And still, I'm even more Team Heatwave this episode. After he was getting along with the Outlaws was fun.
He's kind of left to do his own thing. But sometimes I feel as though his gruff voice is a little too gruff for my liking.
Well, fair enough, but I'm the same way with, I think, Snart overacts too much as
now.
Captain Cold. Stop it. Where he does the whole, I'm going to point my nose down and look up at the corner with my eyes, and kind of does that with his voice. I'm kind of like,
now,
you know,
see,
what?
You,
nope.
You say that. But in 30 years, when people look back at Wentworth Miller's performance as Captain Cold and liken it to that of Adam West and Batman, you'll be the one eating crow, Todd.
Yeah, well, I think I'm the one who's going to win with Heatwave. People are going to remember. They're going to go, you know what? While Wentworth was chewing scenery, Heatwave was the tour de force. He was burning up as a character.
Oh, boy.
With fire and whatnot.
Not burning up doing the Neutron Dance.
Oh, good stuff right there.
All right, so enough of these shows. Let's get into some serious business, Darius Bagfelt, with Walking Dead. You know what? I like the size of the casts, and I like the fact that we get to spread things out so we're not so focused on everyone all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Maggie and Sasha are up to. They are over at Hilltop. We get to find out what Jesus is up to. Enid leaves, and Carl gives chase to her, which to me was a mistake. I think he should have let her go. But, of course, he had ulterior motives, because even though his dad told him not to, he is going to take down Negan by himself. We don't get Negan in this episode, but we do get, I guess, what would be his second or third in command?
Yes, Trevor from Grand Theft Auto V.
Now, see, I don't play video games made after 1997, so I don't get the reference. I just know that his name on the TV show is Simon.
Mm-hmm.
And he is one of those, like, to me, the ultimate, like, character actory looking guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, not to get too far off topic, and then I'll get back. Where the most recent Grand Theft Auto game, they like create the characters and everything, and they just took that guy, and they totally made the character look like him,
right?
And then he acts like Simon but crazier, and he kind of just like he has a tattoo on his neck that has a dotted line that says cut here above it.
Oh boy.
Which I think is fantastic, right? But he is that character, just more methy. And I can't not see it when I see him talk. It's hysterical. So I love the character, though. Don't get me wrong. He's one of my favorite like new characters with the Saviors. But all around on this issue episode, I'm just going to throw it out there. There are things that I loved about this episode and things that I was just like, oh, my God. Like Enid and Carl, their whole thing.
Yeah.
Like you could have just threw – when they started roller skating, I wanted to hear, I got a brand new pair of roller skates. I was just like, this is terrible.
Enid and Carl stuff was definitely the weakest. I like when Carl is Carl, not trying to impress this girl. I like when he's on a mission to kill people.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that I really liked with Carl in this is like him at the end in the truck.
Right.
And in the beginning, him playing darts and completely missing every time.
Well, he's that trying to learn how to use one good eye.
I thought that was great.
Yes, it was fantastic. Again, mm-hmm. when Carl is being, like, driven Carl to kill,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, like the last episode where he had the run-in with Negan goons and everything like that,
mm-hmm.
and he kind of stood his ground, and he didn't, like, back down like a punk like everybody else did. I'm like, that's the Carl that I know and love. And in this one where it's like, I'm going to follow this girl because she's the only girl of my age in this whole area. It's like, no, man, listen, you got a mission. Go kill Negan, and then you can come back and worry about whatever else is going on inside your addled, teenaged, one-eyed mind of yours.
Unable to drive a car. but yeah, though I look at it as I'm with you, all this was to move the plot along to get Enid from where she is to the hilltop.
Right.
Because she has to be the surrogate Sophia from the comic.
That makes sense.
And get her there so when we get to, like where we are now, where that other girl shows up and, you know, there's this whole thing where it's Sophia and Carl. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
We need that over there. And I think the writers were really like, holy crap, Enid's still at Alexandria? We have to get her to – well, Carl's going there to get in the truck to go, you know, face Negan. Have them walk there together. And I think really that's what happened.
Yeah. But I thought Jesus was really good in this episode. I thought Maggie was really good in this episode. I thought Sasha was really good in this episode. And they did a really good job of making Simon. And what's the mayor guy's name?
Gregory, which he's the other. Him being the sleaze that he is.
Right.
He does sleaze so well. So well. And when Jesus pulls the trick on Gregory with the closet,
yep.
and it ends up being all his prized booze instead of Sasha and Maggie, I cracked up because I knew they weren't going to be in the closet.
Absolutely. But I didn't know what was going to be in the closet.
Right. I just thought it was good. And when it turned out to be the bottles of booze and he's like, well, here, I'm giving this to Negan. And he's like, oh, that's so nice. And Simon just grabs the whole box. And he's like, slide that bad boy back in there. I was cracking up.
And he's like, I'm going to tell him this one's for me, not you, because I could use some good whatevers, right?
Well, he says, I want the headline on this one.
But now I'm torn on Simon because he is the way a villain should be. A second or third in command toady to the big bad. No redeeming qualities. Gets a couple good lines in there. You love to hate him. They don't try to give him like a backstory where you feel bad for him only to pee on it the following week.
Oh, you mean Dwight?
Oh, anyway. And see, all of this makes me think it's like, oh, well, they're going to sacrifice at some point. Like, Simon is the one that Dwight is going to take down. Dwight ain't taking down Negan. He's taking down Simon.
Yeah, I fear for Simon because I really like Simon, but he's too good to be second. And he could outshine Negan if they're not careful. Do you know what I mean?
Like, and again, he's going to be someone that they need to give us in small doses.
Mm-hmm. And I think he's not, I'm not going to say tomorrow or the next, but I don't think he's long for the Walking Dead world. He's
making to the end of the season.
Right, he's the character that you love to hate that's going to be expendable.
Right, but we're gonna enjoy him while he lasts.
Mm-hmm. I actually kind of think Daryl might take him out. Whooped Daryl, who's faking it, playing possum. He's gonna do something, and Simon's gonna be like, "Oh my god, he was playing possum the whole time," and Daryl's just gonna be like, "Crack! Oh, zombies got him. I don't know what happened. I was all sad and stuff, and they got him."
No, I think he's going to be the one that, like, he's definitely going to be the one that Dwight takes down. Or okay. Dwight takes him down.
Right.
But I enjoyed this episode, you know? I thought Maggie was really good backing over the car and the zombies and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. That was a really cool scene.
Hey, she did it in high school with a kid's Camaro.
Right.
But, yeah, and I like the way the car was locked up so you couldn't get the radio off.
Yep.
And it had the middle finger on the back of the hatchback.
Classic Negan and crew doing a lot of work for little return.
Exactly. Proving a point, man.
Right. Spending a dime to make a penny on that one.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. So TV was good this week. Is Legend of Tomorrow on this week because of Thanksgiving?
No, it's not. There's just going to be a Flash and a Walking Dead for next week.
Okay. Well, hopefully there's some news between now and then for us to cover.
The announcement that Civil War II is coming out before the end of the year.
I don't think we're going to get that announcement for at least another 2 weeks.
Okay.
All right. So I guess, is there anything else for us to discuss this week?
No, other than where are you having Thanksgiving dinner? On the road?
No, this is a rare staying home. I'm going to be home the Thursday of Thanksgiving. I'm going to my brother's house. He does two turkeys, one regular style, and he deep fries another one.
Be careful with that.
No, he's... My brother's a pro when it comes to that sort of thing.
Awesome.
He's not here to mess around.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and then Friday I got to drive out to Ohio for Root Beer Wrestling.
No, I thought you said you were leaving on Thursday. That's why I got confused.
Usually we would go out to see Brian and Kim and so forth, but this time we're staying home for actual Thanksgiving.
Yay for you.
Yay for me. It's still traveling, just not as much as usual.
Got ya.
What about you? What are you doing for Thanksgiving, sir?
I go up we eat at 1 o'clock at my brother's house, who lives about, I don't know, 20 blocks from my house. I drive up there for 5 to 1. I eat my turkey dinner, fill up some Tupperware containers, and do my half hour, and I come home and watch football.
Sounds like fun.
Hey, it's what I do.
And listen, what you do is pretty.
Pretty awesome.
Right.
But yeah.
So I think that's it.
I think so too.
All right. So for Todd, this is Joe closing out episode 321 of Long Box Heroes, and we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop! We are rolling.
Mama.
It is week 12.
Mama.
We had 9 correct picks, and Asa is going to get them all right this time, correct? Okay, so who would win? A Viking or a lion?
A lion.
Who would win? A redskin or a cowboy?
Cowboy.
A steeler or a colt?
Colt.
A cardinal or a falcon? A jaguar or a buffalo? A titan or a bear? A tiger. Oh, I said a titan, right? Okay, so this one is a tiger or a raven?
Raven.
A giant or a bulldog? A ram or a saint?
Saint.
A 49er or a dolphin?
49.
A charger or a Texan?
Texan.
A Seahawk or a Buccaneer?
Buccaneer.
A Panther or a Raider?
Raider.
A Patriot or a Jet?
Jet.
A Chief or a Bronco?
Bronco. Bronco.
And the last one is a Packer or an Eagle? Now, that's all of our picks, but I need you to do something for me.
What? Ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Dirty deeds done to cheat. 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 Ooh, dirty deeds done to cheat.
Thank you very much.